Hi, I'm Ray Poynter, a co-founder of ResearchWise AI, and this is Talking AI. Today, I'm delighted to be talking with Laura Quinn, president of PJ Quinn. Laura, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here today.
It's wonderful to have you with us. And maybe first of all, you could just give our listeners a little bit of background into yourself and into PJ Quinn.
Thank you. I'm happy to do that. I have been in marketing research since the year 2000, so I guess that's 25 years now. I'm a quali, not a quanti, so math is hard, but I think I've got that one worked out. And prior to moving into market research, I worked in pharmaceuticals and healthcare my entire career, and that has led to the focus at PJ Quinn on pharmaceutical and healthcare research. We're 100% qualitative, and I'd say 99% domestic United States. Will occasionally do key opinion leader research in other markets, but always moderating in English. I do have a background in global research. I spent some time at Cinnovate before they became Ipsos. And I left there in 2011 and formed PJ Quinn Inc. with my business partners, my husband. We're still married, still working together 14 years later. We focus on qualitative projects for pharmaceutical companies, occasionally med tech as well. We're typically speaking with physicians, patients, any stakeholder in the pharmaceutical industry, trying to answer our clients' business questions, typically for specialty care medications, so the more technical medicines. My personal background is as a science person. I left with a degree in biology and then went to medical school. Never practiced medicine. I realized early it wasn't for me, but I do have that sciencey background, so our clients tend to hire us for the more complex projects, oncology and neurology and what have you. So we get handed a question and try and go and get an answer from the right people for our clients.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, I first met Laura at the QRCA International Conference in Berlin earlier this year. And Laura gave a great presentation on how she had explored how to use AI in her business and then how she went about creating a set of protocols to ensure that AI delivered what was needed by the business. So, Laura, can you tell us about your journey? What started the journey and then how did you proceed through it?
I'd be happy to. And I should have said in introducing the company that we're a two-person company, just me and my husband. So that does impact our resources and our ability to try new things while we're still executing and keeping the lights on during business. My initial attraction to AI was probably that same as the rest of the world. It's coming, you know, it's coming, and you've got to figure out what to do with it. And I'm unashamed to admit that I was a bit deer in the headlights with this because I'm not a techie. I don't think of myself in that way. I use computers because I have to and because they're good tools, but it's not something I've ever enjoyed. But I was fascinated with the idea of AI and very curious as to how and even if it was applicable to what we do. As a 100% qualitative shop, we're very conscious of what we do behind the emotions and the in-depth and iterative research, being able to evolve and adapt as we go through speaking with participants. A lot of our studies have small numbers of people because there aren't that many people in the world with a particular disease or that treat a particular disease. And so it's very important that we be able to evolve and learn from the first interview, and that may change if we're doing 10 or 15, none of them are the same. And so some of the concerns I had about AI were the applicability to the type of research that we do. Were we going to be able to continue to do what makes PJ Quinn Inc. who we are, which is being quite adaptable, listening very carefully to that individual that I'm communicating with at that moment and asking questions in a way that works for them. I was very nervous that I'd need to be much more rigid and much more quant-like in my approach to research and interactions with people. I also had questions, I think, as most of us do, about the ethics around AI and how was information being stored, shared, were models being trained based on my participants who might have had no idea that that was happening. So I had lots and lots of questions. And one of the reasons that I attended the worldwide conference in Lisbon in, what did that have been, 2023, I think, was because it was heavily focused on AI. And so, with some trepidation, I went in saying, all right, we're going to master this. We have to start somewhere. And I heard great presentations from so many people at that conference. Can I mention
Yeah,
names? That
absolutely.
Daniel Burkle stands out. I still remember a presentation he gave where he gave a little speech and instantly translated it into Portuguese and gave a video with him looking as if he were speaking Portuguese, not a word of which he actually spoke. And I was just enthralled. I mean, how could this even happen? Listening to fellow Qualis who had begun to adapt the technology, I think it began to erase some of my doubts as to whether it was appropriate, but then centered my doubts on how do we, as a two-person shop, make this happen, and as I said earlier, keep business moving forward. So I think feeling threatened had really skewed my view. I was focusing on all the reasons that AI was scary or frightening or might not be applicable. And I lost sight of the bigger goal, which was doing what we do as well as we do it, but maybe with a bit more speed and a bit more depth. One of the things about being a two-person company is you don't have a lot of people around to bounce ideas off. And it's great, I've learned, and maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse, but having AI as a way of vetting my own hypotheses. Of course, I ask it as well to generate some of its own, but it's almost like having that little work colleague that's there at 3 in the morning when you decide to get up and work at 3 in the morning, you don't have to feel guilty about asking it to jump on and work with you. We decided after Lisbon that embracing AI was going to take some effort for us, but it was the road to the future of our practice. And so we went about a fairly structured approach to trying to figure out how to best use and when not to use AI going forward. So I'll take a breath here. And do you want me to talk about that pathway, or what would be most
Yeah, I'm
helpful?
really interested in the pathway. So you started to take a structured approach. Once we get there, if you could also go through some of the protocols and the guidelines that you've now adapted, and also where you don't use AI is interesting too, because I don't think you use it for data collection at the moment.
No, we do not. We all of our projects are person to person, usually by phone or Zoom, like you and I are speaking now. Certainly, there's still some face to face, but COVID reduced that dramatically for our business, and I think for most of our colleagues as well. So, going back to the way we explored this, I think I was quite nervous about finding a supplier. We are a small shop. We're not a huge enterprise server organization. We're doing enough to keep two people comfortably employed, but that's about it. So we're not going to be a big client for any AI platform supplier. And I really felt a bit overwhelmed by choosing a supplier. Fortunately, my business partner, who's also my life partner and my husband, is much more of a techie than I am and was quite not only willing but enthused about interviewing several suppliers. And we talked to, I think he talked to five or six companies. He brought me in for the last three or four to do our final evaluation of them. And what we, at least the two of us, believe is most of the companies that are out there can do what we need them to do. It was more a question of look and feel, what was most comfortable, where we thought we'd get the most support, and certainly a pricing model that worked for us. We ultimately chose Co-Loop. We've been very, very happy with that decision. I know there are other providers that are also quite good that I'm sure would have had a good experience with as well. But with Co-Loop, we have found a lot of hands-on as far as training. They do weekly programs and what have you, which is helping us get better and better with what we do. Cost was certainly a driving concern for us. We needed something that was affordable but also predictable. And I'd rather pay a bit more each month, but no, I'm not going to top out on my hours if we have a big month. We actually just finished one of our biggest crunches ever, and we had to pay for a bit of extra time, and it was fine. But for the most part, we've picked a number that we don't think we'll normally ever exceed of number of hours of interviews each month. And this is the first time in a year and a half that we ever did exceed that. Most of these platforms are designed for these large companies. We needed something that fit our budget, and subscription pricing was the best way for us to go, just estimating a specific number of hours. There are other people may find it works differently for them, and if they're not using AI in every project, they may prefer to go project by project. But for us, subscription made sense. I certainly had to have my concerns about security and privacy met. Obviously, that's an issue for all researchers, but in healthcare in the United States and in European countries, I know as well, we're bound by some very specific regulations to protect patient privacy and keeping with the Sunshine Act in the United States, keeping healthcare professionals' privacy from the paying client on the pharmaceutical side. So there were a lot of concerns there about ensuring that whatever provider we work with could meet HIPAA requirements in the US and GDPR requirements as well. So our concerns were eased by learning how the data was stored, how it was used and wasn't used, and the encryption and security protocols that each of these suppliers we interviewed, we talked those through. And I couldn't go into the details of that. Pete did all that, but we feel
Now,
much better about that.
those sort of issues, were they one of the reasons why you decided not to go for, say, Gemini or Copilot or ChatGPT, but actually to go for one of the providers of a specific service?
That was certainly one reason. We do have a closed subscription to ChatGPT that I will use only for things like proofreading slides, blinded slides, or helping me streamline copy and what have you. But I wanted something that was designed for researchers. And my understanding is, most of these platforms are using ChatGPT or one of the standard engines behind them, right? But it needed to be easy because I'm not a techie. And I love that these companies have applied this platform to our industry. So they know that we need to be able to segment, that we need to be able to see data at the participant level as well as at the full sample level. The way, at least with Co-Loop, I think many of the others that I've seen as well, allowing us to pull clips out, taking us right to the source, not just giving me the AI's conclusions of what the data said, but in Co-Loop, at least, it links me right back to the specific quote that a person said. So I don't have to worry about hallucination. First of all, I do all of our interviews, so I know what's been said. And I link back to every single verbatim. And if I don't remember it, then I'm going to go to the tape and listen to the tape. And that's all happening right within Co-Loop, really easy, click of a button. That gave me a tremendous amount of assurance that the data was really my data. Also with ChatGPT, I'm quite nervous that it's going to go out and, look for its own sources of data, even when I tell it to focus in on something else. So it was important to us to have a dedicated research-based platform.
And again, we might be jumping to something later on, but you're talking there about checking the transcript. And I think You made the point when you were presenting in Berlin that for you, that also means listening to the tape, although, of course, it's not a tape, but we don't have
We're
the
showing our
microphone.
gray
We
hair.
are. So the words on just transcripts can sometimes be misleading. And so having that is quite a nice piece. It's a lot of the platforms are just transcript based.
Right. And CoLoop does allow you, if you're uploading your audio, you can click, you can just hear the conversation, which of course, if you're the sole moderator like I am, is valuable. If you're not the sole moderator, it's really valuable, I would imagine, because I have heard tales of people being very uncomfortable that they felt that they were being fed data that wasn't necessarily part of the study. So that's not something we ever have to worry about here because we can listen. I hear my voice, I hear the participant's voice. I remember that it was said during an interview.
So let's jump now to the protocols. What are the sorts of things that you've changed so that you can actually take advantage of AI in doing this sort of work?
Sure. So, one thing you think we're all market researchers. Oh, we know how to write questions. Well, yes, but writing questions to AI is a bit different than speaking with a person. And prompt engineering was, I think, the most important thing that we made an investment in time-wise. There are several free resources that one can go to improve on this. And we've taken advantage both of free and paid programs to improve our prompt engineering, spend a lot of time with that. And I will often ask questions in two or three different ways to make sure I'm getting the same answer, just making sure that I'm not inadvertently, by the way I ask my question. And we do this with participants too, right? You'd never
Yes.
just use one projective technique. You're going to use four or five and triangulate that. And so that's part of what we do. We have invested upfront as well in discussion guide development, and in preparing for a project. It takes us a little bit more time upfront than it used to in the past. I really have to think through how I'm asking questions so that when I do my analysis, I can direct AI to the section of the interview that I'm interested in. And that's easier with some types of studies than others. If you're doing a market landscape study or a patient journey, it's fairly easy to say, tell me about diagnosis and how patients get diagnosed. But if you're looking at two or three product profile assessments that maybe vary only a little bit in what's the difference in scenario A versus scenario B, if you're not quite careful in the language that you're using during the interview and the way you're going back and tagging things in the transcripts, you can be very misled and you think that your AI is talking about scenario A, but in reality, it's pulling together information from scenarios A, B, and C. So we've learned to be very thoughtful when we develop discussion guides as to keywords that I can use. I even explain to my participants sometimes that you're going to be hearing me mention a code word each different slide I show you. You can ignore that. It's just to help me when I'm looking at my notes to make sure that I'm on the same page. Those are small little tips that you learn by messing them up and then realizing, oh, great, I got to go back and hand code all of these things now. We also, I'm not sure if this is totally relevant to your question, but I think it's important to mention when we first started to employ the AI methodology, we did everything twice. I did my own analysis with no AI. And I also went back and fed in audio from projects we had done in the past that I'd already done reports on and looked for conclusions that AI would draw. And I figured out how to ask my questions. And I found, I think I may have mentioned this in Berlin as well. I found if I had five key conclusions in a study I had written, three of them would be almost identical with what AI came up with. One of them would be something that was maybe a little dodgy, I'm not so sure I agree with that. And the final would be one that I hadn't thought of, that I probably should have thought of each time. So that greatly increased my confidence when I saw that much matching up of my own brain with the AI brain. So after we had done a few projects with nothing at stake, because we're just reanalyzing old data, then we began double work. I'll do it by hand and I'll do it with AI. And after three or four projects, it was quite apparent that I was just wasting my time not using the tool from the beginning. We've now integrated AI into, I'd say, almost every project that we use, at least for a portion of the project. There are certain analyses that I don't really rely on the AI as much. I'm careful when I'm doing concept tests. You can, with tagging, you can, and CoLoop has a really cool way of tagging concepts so that you can go in and make sure you're talking about the right thing. But if I've got a client that's got really slight executional differences in a concept, I'm going to do most of that work by hand, and then just look to the AI for maybe finding quotes that I'm looking for, identifying things quickly in the transcript. So, let's see, what else can I tell you? We've also been really careful about keywording and thinking before we start a project about what's the terminology that might be difficult for the AI transcription to hear. So I always develop, I guess in the old days we'd have called it a code book. Now it's keywords, but I try to think through in advance of the interview, especially because we use so much medical terminology. What are the 17 different names for a drug? Drugs have, when they first come to market, they're letters and numbers, and then they're generic names, and then they're a branded name, and some of them may have abbreviations that the doctors use when speaking, especially in oncology. So I might have five different words to describe one drug, and my AI needs to know that those are all the same thing. I may not think to type in, tell me everything that was said about cisplatin, carboplatin, whatever all the names are. I need to be able to tell it, if you hear this, think all these other things as well.
Well,
So
do you upload a briefing document at the beginning of the analysis?
we do, and we upload our discussion guide as well, although I'm not sure how helpful that is because I don't stick to them very well. I move around quite a bit. But we do upload briefing. We upload the discussion guide, certainly any concepts that we're testing. And that honestly, back to your point earlier about why we're not just using ChatGPT, even though we pay for the private subscription, I am just far more confident when I'm sharing material that is highly confidential, that a company like a CoLoop is keeping my data as my data, and it's not going out there into the Twitterverse, Xverse.
So, we often talk about three things: cheaper, faster, and better. So, it's not cheaper because
No.
you would have done it without the computer. Now there is a subscription on top of that. In what ways is it faster, do you think?
Oh, well, here's my old way. I didn't mean to. I had these off camera for a reason, but this is the last study that I just finished analyzing. And you see, I still have my habit of all my little sticky flags and what have you for verbatims, but it takes quite a lot of time pawing through my paper written notes. I wasn't much of a transcript person in the past because it took so long to get them. I was usually done with the report by the time the transcripts would even come in. It's so much faster to be able to just go in and say, I remember hearing somebody say something about how this drug was the workhorse and that drug was the show horse. Who was that? And what was the context? Boom, there it is. I don't have to look through 30 different stacks to remember which one it was. It takes micros. It takes me longer to type the question than it does to get the answer out. That's a tremendous time savings. And really, we say it's not cheaper, but if you value your own time,
Definitely.
And I do, I do value my time. I'm not getting any younger. I'd like to have an extra hour of sleep at night.
And of course, if you had employees doing this, and if you're a slightly larger company, then it would be real money, as opposed to just coming out of your own time and effort and reward. So that's, we can see some of the ways why it's better. And I love the fact we can type in these vague questions, like somebody said something about the show horse and the workhorse, and I can find that. Whereas there have been some great platforms around for a while, but you often needed to be really close to the right phrase before you could find it. And
Yeah, and
we're a lot
this,
more approximate now.
yeah, it catches things that really you don't have to be all that. You have to know how to frame a question, but
Yes.
you don't have to be all that close. And it may pull up two or three examples, one or two of which are not what you're looking for, but it almost always finds the one I'm looking for. And one thing that I've learned, I don't know if this is really an insider, if everybody but me knew this, but I give it permission to tell me if my question is not good. So, and I do that in ChatGPT as well, even if I'm doing something that's not work related. Here's what I need you to do. What questions do you have for me before you do it? Or here's what I need you to do. Am I asking you to do something that you can't do? I will often, in fact, I still always, before I even turn to Coloop at all, after I complete a study, I draft my five top of mind conclusions about a study. And once I've gone through and done most of my analysis, I will use the chat feature in Coloop, that they've got a grid feature. I don't know how familiar you are. Have you seen Coloop?
I've
Have you
seen
worked
it,
with
yeah.
it? Yeah. So they have an analysis grid feature which will give you the respondent by respondent data in answer to your question, and then a summary of that. You get a summarized transcript for each participant, which is wonderful if you've got a client that misses two or three interviews and they ask you to send a summary. Boom, it's done in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
I used to spend ages summarizing interviews at the end of the day for a day that my client wasn't there, and so much easier. But anyhow, knowing when to use the chat feature and when to use the grid feature is something I think you develop your own skill for. I'm always telling it, no, that's not it. Go back and look again. I'll ask for verbatims on a certain topic, and maybe I don't remember workhorse and show horse, but I remember that there was something really cool that was said about something, and I'll say, find me verbatims about this, and it will give me three or four, and I'll say, that's not it. Go look again, and it will.
Yeah.
And I speak to it the way I would an intern, and I view
Thank
it the
you.
way I would an intern. That they're smart, they have insights that I might not have, but they also might overinterpret something, they might miss something. I'm never, I think, going to be comfortable thinking that AI's got it all and it doesn't need me anymore. Maybe that's hubris on my part. But I'm the one whose name is on the report when it goes
Exactly.
out.
So we've talked about cheaper, we talked about faster. Is it better sometimes?
Yeah, I think sometimes it is. As I said a minute ago, when I would vet my conclusions versus the AI conclusions for a study, there's almost always, 15 to 20% that I missed something or I didn't quite see it from that angle. I think AI does a really good job of finding thematic things, especially when you have a study with a lot of people, which for me, a lot of people is more than 30. I forever think my clients are talking to too many people, but sometimes we need to talk to multiple people. Maybe we're speaking to patients and to primary care physicians and to endocrinologists, let's say. So we've got 10 or 15 of each, and that when you've got lots of people and you're doing all the interviews yourself, and maybe they're all mixed up. Is that, I don't tend to get all 10 of one specialty together. It can be really hard to keep track of, well, how were the endocrinologists different from the primary care specialists? And I do think AI does a better job than I do of keeping that straight in its head. And it's easy to go back and check it and make sure that it's not, making something up. I think that's better. And, I tell my clients the upside of working with a small company like mine is you're always getting me. I'm never going to take your work and pass it down to someone who reports to me. The downside of that is, it's one brain. I don't tell them that. It's one brain and not two, three, or four. And, I think having that AI even to bounce ideas off. And I've had AI say to me, I'll go in and say, here's my five conclusions from this study. What do you think? And for each one, it will say, conclusion number one, well supported by the data. Here's some examples from the data with some specific quotes that support your conclusion. Or here's a conclusion you may have missed. And here's some of the data and the reason I'm giving you that conclusion. Or here's a conclusion that I'm not quite sure the data supports. Here's why I question that conclusion. And sometimes I disagree with it and say, nope, you're wrong, I'm right. And other times I have to go back and say, maybe I am hearing that one really loud doctor a little bit more than the other 10 who said something different. You have these interviews, I think it's a quality. You get off the phone or off the Zoom and you go, oh, that person was great. I love them. I'd go see him if he were my doctor. And it's impossible not to have, just like clients do, it's impossible not to have that little desire to have the guy you liked in science move to the top of the list a bit,
Absolutely.
I
So we're running fast out of time, but I just wanted, if you were talking to a small qualitative practice, four, five, six people, and they've not started with AI yet, what sort of advice would you give them?
The first is start playing with AI in your other life. I think I mentioned to you I'm headed off to Italy in a few days, and I planned my whole vacation with AI and practiced my prompt engineering, how to ask questions, how to get what I'm looking for. You get much more comfortable when the stakes are low. You need a recipe for something using the ingredients in your pantry. Let AI help you do that. You're working on a crossword puzzle and can't figure out the answer. Let AI help you do that. Begin to get comfortable with it in the stakes are low part of your life. And if you're a curious person, which I think most of us in research are, you're going to begin to evolve that thinking into, well, how could I use this in my work? So I think that's the first thing is just play with it. Just play around. And as I said, I'm not a techie. I don't love it, but I can't tell you how many times a day I'm using AI now and for the broad variety of things, whether it's my Italian tutor or my shopping list or whatever it might be, all the way through my work. And then I'd also say, know what you're most frightened of, whether that's going over budget or whether it's hallucination, and just attack that directly. Ask five people who are using it what their opinions are in that issue. I'm constantly talking with people about it and hearing things that, oh, I never thought of that. I need to build that in. Do what we do. We're researchers. We research things. Try it. You've got nothing to lose. And most of these companies are great about letting you have a trial project or a few hours. Don't do that when you're selling it to someone. Go back and reanalyze an old project. It'll really increase comfort. So.
Fantastic. Okay, Laura, that's been wonderful talking to you again. And I'm sure our listeners are going to find that really interesting and useful.
I enjoyed it so much. I'm really honored to have the chance to talk with you, Ray.
Pleasure.